Certainly happy to be here at the Farm Bureau convention. Had a great opportunity to visit briefly with Bob Stallman, who is a good friend. This has been an interesting time for American agriculture, and it's 2013 is an important and critical year. We've got to get a farm bill done. There's some very important work that's going to be done at USDA on a variety of challenging issues. Obviously, we're deeply concerned about the budget situation as well. So it's a time of uncertainty, but it's a time of great promise and great potential. So excited to be here.
Mr. Secretary, the President proposed $33 billion in spending cuts for for the Agriculture Department in his budget for fiscal 12. That's not quite at the upper end of what Congress has proposed for the Farm Bill. What would the administration suggest for spending cuts for the Farm Bill now that we have a new go-around?
Well, I don't know that that those decisions have been fully and completely made. Part of the challenge for us right now is not knowing where we are for the 2013 budget. Let's just start with that. Here's the challenge for us. USDA, a year ago I came to this convention and talked about the steps that we were going to take to become a more efficient USDA. We've closed nearly 250 offices and labs. Our workforce is roughly 6,000 less than it was in 2009. We have cut down supplies, travel, conferences, and have begun a strategic sourcing, all of which has resulted in about $100 million plus being saved. We've already seen our operating budget cut. And now what we're faced with is the possibility in a month or so of sequester being triggered. And to give you a sense of what that means, is if sequester is in fact triggered, we will have roughly 6 months of a fiscal year to embrace and to figure out how to cut over 8% of our budget, which is the impact or effect of a 16% cut in that six-month time period. And there is just no way we can do it without dramatically impacting and affecting the services that are important to people at this convention and people in rural America and people all across America. So my first concern right now is making sure that we're watching very carefully the money that is being spent until we get some clarity on the 2013 budget. My second priority is to make sure that we continue to impress upon Congress, and particularly the leadership of Congress, the importance of getting a farm bill done this year. There has been, for a multitude of reasons, this is important. It's important for providing producer certainty. It's important to continue the momentum that's been building in the rural economy with the bio-based economy and local and regional food systems and things of that nature. It's important because it offers another opportunity potentially to provide some assistance for livestock producers who have been impacted by drought. It's important because we need to make a very concerted commitment to research. So it's important that we focus on getting that job done. Putting together a 2014 budget that allows us to do the important work of providing the safety net for farmers, extending credit, particularly to beginning farmers, making sure that our rural development programs are operating efficiently and effectively, focusing on this new economy we're trying to build, embracing research, creating new opportunities in conservation to leverage public dollars, making sure that we continue to build on our record trade year. I mean, there's just a lot of things that will go into that budget. But right now, our focus is on trying to get through 2013 and getting a farm bill.
Mr. Secretary, could you talk more about your comments about working with other groups that we may not agree with, such as, you talk about UEP and HSUS. How do you work with a group if their end goal is to eliminate animal agriculture? How do you find any common ground to work with if that's the ultimate end that they're shooting for?
Well, Mike, I think it's you first and foremost is to make sure you use the opportunity to educate people about precisely what is going on in the countryside, and maybe there might be, as a result of that educational effort, a change of view on the part of those who have that extreme view. Maybe there is a way in which you basically empower what I like to refer to as the moderate middle of any organization to understand that there is some common cause and some common ground. My concern is 1,130 counties losing population the last 10 years, at what point in time do we in rural America say, we've got to focus on this, we've got to figure out ways in which we can extend economic opportunity? That's hard to do if you don't have a farm bill. It's hard to do if you can't get the attention of political leaders in the House to get something done when the Senate passes a bill and the House Ag Committee passes a bill, and there seems to be consensus and no doubt in my mind that if they had put that baby on the board, she would have passed with more than 218 votes. So we've got to look at things a little bit differently. And I understand and appreciate that some may not agree with that, but this is designed to basically get people thinking in a different, you know, in a different way. It's a different time. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. Mark, I don't want to put Mark on the spot here, but this is his 32nd Farm Bureau convention, and I suspect he would be hard-pressed to identify a time when the Senate passed a farm bill, the House Ag Committee passed a farm bill, and we didn't have a farm bill. So I think he would also be hard-pressed to find a time in history where we've had as many referendum either being proposed or considered. So what the egg producers did seemed to me to be reasonable. They thought, my golly, we don't want to face 50 of these. Let's see if there's any common ground. I'm not suggesting it's easy. I'm not suggesting that you wouldn't be very frustrated by what you heard, but there is an opportunity here, and maybe it's not that particular organization, maybe it's other organizations, but the point of this is we need to build strategic alliances, we need to have constructive engagement, we need to have a proactive message, because there is an unlimited opportunity here. And when I meet with farm groups and farmers, they express concern about regulations and they express concern about taxes and the fiscal situation, understand all of that. But that's, you know, that's telling me how hard things are. Let's also talk about the opportunity side of this, because we're trying to encourage young people who have unlimited opportunities all over the world. But I don't think if we really talk about what's going on in rural America, I don't think there's any other place in the world that can match it. But we don't talk that way.
You mentioned the acre opt-in, opt-out that USDA is going to permit. Uh-huh. We've also, USDA this fall managed to kind of rejigger some dairy funds, some market access program funds from both unused funds, underused accounts. Basically, through March 27th, this USDA plan to look at ways to kind of reconfigure funding for vital programs, at least programs that kind of meet some of those bioeconomy goals, rural goals, et cetera.
Some of it's difficult to do. We were able to do the export assistance programs because we were confident at some point in time the regular Foreign Ag Service budget would be funded. So we essentially robbed Peter to pay Paul, and now we've got to pay Paul back, or we've got to pay Peter back, I guess. So we had the capacity to do that in the Foreign Ag budget. But as the fiscal year continues to go on, those options become less available, and the concern becomes deeper that we don't yet have a resolution on sequester, and so therefore the time that we have to potentially adjust to these cuts is shrinking. And even if sequester is averted, it will be averted with some kind of deal, and my guess is that deal will mean the Defense Department isn't going to get cut as much, which means that somebody else may get cut more. So it is really difficult to administer a department under these uncertain times. We're going to do the best we can, knowing that we've got several things we have to do. We have to continue to promote trade. We have to continue to try to break barriers down. We have to continue to invest in the bio-based economy. We have to continue to make conservation resources available. And we have to continue to make sure we get credit, particularly directed to those who need credit the most. And we need, to the extent we can, to use our purchasing power to assist any particular commodity that might be faced with a difficult market. But our options are limited, and they are particularly limited for livestock producers and dairy producers. Yes, sir.
When you're talking about cuts and sequestration, do you have any sense as to whether or not crop insurance would be a target?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost, people recognize that crop insurance has already provided some degree of budget reduction as we reconfigured the standard reinsurance agreement. I think the sentiment from the Congress has been less inclined to look at crop insurance, recognizing that that's sort of the linchpin or the anchor, if you will, for a for a safety net. I think a much larger or deeper question is the issue of direct payments, and how certain are we all that direct payments will actually be available. I think the concern that a lot of people have is what Congress basically extended. I suppose they could unextend, if there is such a word. You know, what Congress giveth, they can taketh away. And so we at USDA are going to do what we're supposed to do, and we'll do it in a timely way. But it's not unrealistic to believe that as they're looking for deficit reduction strategies, direct payments is, I think, far less popular than crop insurance.
You mentioned some new markets. Are you ready to reveal what those might be, new foreign markets opening up?
That's why I said in a couple of weeks. You were listening to my speech.
Could you give me a continent?
It's not Antarctica, let's put it that way.
Secretary, you talked about acre, and you're going to give farmers that are in acre a chance to opt out and vice versa. Talk about that. Is there any budget ramifications there?
Conceivably, there could be, but we were trying to determine what Congress intended. They weren't clear about this. What Congress was clear about was providing that opportunity at the beginning of the 2008 Farm Bill cycle. And our view is that by not addressing it specifically, Congress assumed that we would create this option. We'll see how many, if any, folks who are in acre opt out because it's not as attractive. I think it's fair to say that we learned a lot about those kinds of programs, what to do and what not to do from this effort. I think people were more hopeful that that would be utilized by more producers, and it hasn't been, which is why I think the Senate and the House Ag Committee were looking at different constructs. It gets back to my point about direct payments and the need for us to get this farm bill done quickly, and the reason being that if you've got this pot of money out here, there's nothing preventing Congress from basically scooping the money, which then creates it a difficulty for you in fashioning a five-year bill, because you don't have the flexibility that the direct payment monies could have provided to create something supplementing crop insurance. It just behooves everyone get this done and get it done quickly.
Mr. Secretary, there are petitions in a number of different states, Washington, New Mexico, the Prop 37 in California, petitions before the FDA. In your position and opinion and what you know of the business, is there any reason that food should have to be labeled if they contain a percentage of an ingredient that came from a genetically enhanced crop?
Well, I know, let me put it this way, Jeff. I know of no health reason connected to GMOs that would require labeling under our current labeling philosophy, which is that we label to provide nutrition information and we label to provide information about potential risks. I don't think there is a risk. Every individual state obviously has the right to consider whatever their referendum laws allow. But I see this potentially as an opportunity. Although it's a challenge, it's also an opportunity to begin to educate people about what this science actually is. I mentioned earlier today that a young person, if I were speaking to a young person who was interested in trying to deal with the moral challenge of our time, which is to feed an ever-increasing world population, I find it extremely difficult to understand how that can be done without science and without the benefits and technologies that science provides. Sure, the science needs to be tested and risks need to be known, but I just don't see how you can constrain that science. Now, I've got a lot of disagreement from a lot of folks in agriculture about that, but that's how I feel strongly about that. So we're going to continue to do our job to promote science, to promote investments in research. At the same time, I don't want to disparage any other type of agriculture. If somebody wants to be an organic producer, boy, I hope they do, and I hope they succeed. And I hope we can create markets for all kinds of agriculture. To me, it's about expanding markets, and it's about educating people. So these referendums are costly and they're difficult, I know, but we need to see them as also an opportunity to educate. And, you know, obviously the folks in California made a decision. We'll see what happens in Washington.
Yes. Jerry? Under the Farm Bill extension, when are you supposed to make the direct payments? And do you think, or maybe do you hope, that Congress will instead use that money in a new Farm Bill for a new program before those payments would be made?
Jerry, I may stand corrected on this, but I'm under the assumption and belief that it happens sometime in the fall, but that we begin the process of signing people up much sooner than that. My hope for Congress is that they act, that they get a farm bill done. I mean, look at all the uncertainty there is now. I mean, first of all, you got the uncertainty of the drought. You got 597 counties already declared disaster areas. That number may very well increase if we don't get the right kind of winter snows and early spring rains. You've got the sequester, which may impact the USDA operating budget, which may impact our capacity to provide services to people in the countryside. You have no farm bill. I mean, you got an extension, but you have an extension of just part of the farm bill. So if you're a specialty crop guy, you're out in the cold. You get nothing from that extension. If you're a dairy guy, you get MILC. That doesn't really provide you much help. And if you're a livestock guy who got hammered by the drought, you are totally out of luck. So you got all this uncertainty, and all it takes is for Congress to act. Now, we know the Senate's capable of passing a bill, and we know the Senate Ag Committee or the House Ag Committee, even with new members, can get a bill through. I mean, I think Colin Peterson has a legitimate ask, if you will, of making sure that if they go through all of this, that we're not confronted with a big red stop sign from leadership. I think we need to get this done. And it's inconceivable to me that we wouldn't get it done, especially since the ag community stepped forward with significant savings. You pick a number, the Senate number $23 billion, to pick a House number $34 billion, whatever it was, that's real money. And to my knowledge, we're the only outfit that stepped forward. So why wouldn't you take advantage of that? It gets back to my point, which is we've got to figure out ways in which the political clout of rural America matches the relevance to the rest of America in what rural America contributes to it. I mean, it's the food, the water, the energy, the fuel, the jobs, the places where people recreate, and the military. I mean, these are all serious, significant contributions. And then if you get into the issue of climate change and all of the issues involving that, where do you think a lot of that's going to happen? It's going to happen in rural America. So it's really an important place. So it deserves a five-year bill.
Can you elaborate on what you're looking for in immigration reform?
Well, the president's been very clear, and I think the president's right. It's got to be comprehensive. It would be great for individual aspects of the economy to carve out your little niche and say, solve our problem. But the reality is the country needs a sane immigration policy, and that policy must acknowledge that people are here and has to provide some kind of process by which they can be legitimately here, recognizing through the payment of fines and other steps that they didn't get here the way they should, putting them to the back of the line, learning the language, paying your back taxes if any taxes are owed. All those things have to be part of it, but there has to be a pathway. It has to be comprehensive. And for the sake of agriculture, for the sake of the country, it needs to get done. And that's another one of those issues that really, frankly, the story of this country has been an immigrant story. And this needs to get done. And I think there's a growing consensus that my hope is it will get done in this Congress.
Mr. Secretary, with regard to ractopamine levels in Russia, is there any way for the U.S. to comply with the standards that we have today to match what they're asking?
We continue to work with them, Jeff, on this to educate them, quote unquote, about what is and what is not a risk. And that was one of the reasons why I was hopeful that we would get done what in fact did get done, which is to get them fully engaged in WTO and give us the capacity to, that if necessary, to take steps. We have fought really hard in the last several years with Codex to try to get a better international understanding of rectopamine. We achieved that. Now we have to build on it. And it's not just Russia. There are other countries where we have to basically work. We've set as a goal in our Foreign Ag Service to really look at least three significant sanitary or phytosanitary barriers to sort of knock down this year. And we're working on a whole range of them. And my hope is that we reach that goal. Because when you do, you obviously expand trade opportunities and you make a fairer and more balanced trade system. You're pointing, Courtney, on who?
Michelle.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, you can go first. It's I don't get to ask the question.
I couldn't see. The light's pretty bright. Sorry.
I guess my question is, when you look at the demographics of the map after the presidential election, you talk about political clout. How do we get political clout back in American agriculture with what is happening with the urban-rural divide?
Well, I think it is part of what I've suggested. I mean, first of all, there are great opportunities and creative opportunities to get the agricultural message out in non-traditional ways. I mean, you know, the Secretary of Defense is going to be asked, nominee is going to be asked a lot of questions, but this is an opportunity to talk about the Defense Department's commitment to biofuels and renewable energy and creating opportunities here and reducing our reliance on foreign oil. Commerce Secretary could be asked about investments in rural communities, the Treasury Secretary, the new market tax credit, the EPA administrator, fairly obvious set of questions. So there's that way. There is the strategic alliance where you basically build relationships with folks, and this immigration issue is one place where we have the opportunity to reach out to the evangelical faith-based community, for example, that has its own political influence and essentially say, my Bible background, the story of the loaves and the fishes, it's about feeding people. Well, that's kind of what agriculture is doing, but it needs help. It needs help to know what the certainty of the programs are. It needs help to continue to provide productivity that allows us not only to meet our own needs, but to export and to provide food assistance and food aid. All of a sudden, you've got allies who are conveying that message beyond just simply the American Farm Bureau, as important as it is. The immigration issue also allows us to reach out to minority groups that also have their own constituencies, their own political support network. We need to attach to those networks. I think constructive engagement is also a way of expanding, talking to folks that you may not have talked to before or talked a lot to, and maybe you find common ground on an issue or a particular aspect that builds an alliance. And I think a proactive message that is conveyed across agriculture, across rural America, across the land-grant university system about this enormous contribution that rural America makes and the enormous opportunity rural America has to redefine the American economy, to feed the hungry, to create a new energy future for the country, dealing with climate change. All of those create opportunities for us to broaden our network to advocate for a five-year bill that touches on each and every one of those aspects. If I'm an evangelical minister or preacher, I am interested in nutrition programs because I'm concerned about the poor. There's an alliance. If I'm an environmentalist and I'm worried about climate extremes, conservation creates the opportunity potentially to address climate. If I'm a person who's interested in poverty issues, I realize that 90% of the persistent poverty in counties is in rural areas. I have now an interest in what the farm legislation will say about rural poverty. I mean, there are just a million ways for us to build these alliances. We've done a great job of talking to each other. Cattlemen talk to the pork producers, and the pork producers talk to the corn guys, and the corn guys talk to the bean guys. We got to talk to a bigger audience because there are not enough of us. And it's pretty doggone clear that congressional leaders believed that there were no political repercussions of essentially saying no farm bill. when everybody in the countryside was, said, we want a farm bill. We have, what, 41 organizations, four farm organizations, who said, we want a farm bill in 2012. 41. No farm bill.
As you look back at your first term, what do you view as your top accomplishment and also perhaps your biggest disappointment and things that you want to work on, issue that you want to work on the most going forward?
Surviving these press conferences. I really appreciate that question, but I want to ask for permission because I can't answer it with a single, and the reason I can't is because the USDA is so diverse. I mean, I'm really proud of 4 years of record exports because I know that helps to support farm income, and I also know that it creates and supports nearly a million jobs. I'm really proud of the work we've done in civil rights, ending cases that have been on file for years, decades, transforming the department. I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of the fact that we have the lowest fraud rate in the SNAP program and the lowest error rate in the history of that program. I'm really proud of the work we've done in energy and the unique relationship we now have with the Department of Defense and Department of Energy to create drop-in aviation and marine fuel. I'm really proud of the expansion of broadband. I mean, I'm proud of a lot of stuff we've done, and we've done it with less money and restructuring and reorganizing the department. I mean, it's been an amazing 4 years. I am just thankful I have more time because there's more to do. So, you know, a disappointment would be that we couldn't get a five-year bill. So the president said, okay, you got four more years to get a five-year bill. Or however many days of that he's pleased with my service. I mean, look, everybody should be disappointed we don't have a bill. It's crazy we don't have a bill. It really is. It's nuts. But it does give us an opportunity to come together and to, you know, it challenges our thinking and it challenges our approach. And I think this is going to be, at the end of the day, it's going to be a positive outcome if we make it that way. I do have a great job. This is a great job. I don't know, all the challenges and all the difficulties. Good, you work for good people. And when you talk to those FFA kids, you talk to those 4-H kids, and you see the look in their eye, and you realize these kids are really excited and enthusiastic and raring to go, it keeps you young. So thank you all.